Hello and welcome to this edition of the Golf Show Podcast with Rex and Lav. It's been a minute since we fired up the pod machine. Rex, how's it going today?
Not as good as it's going in the Lavner house. I just asked you a question right before we came off. You came on air. You seem to be a little thrown by it. First things first, is it okay to still decorate for Halloween? You pointed out that yes, it is, but you did not do it. Your wife did it. And number two, how old is too old to go trick-or-treat?
Okay, first question. I did not decorate. My wife has. I will say the two hurricanes that we have had in the Jacksonville area in the past 3 weeks have thrown a damper into some of those plans. They're either blowing away or we're taking them down, bringing them inside, then we're forgetting to put them back out. We do have a couple skeletons around. We do still have some ghosts that are up in the tree. As it relates to trick-or-treating, I still go, but basically just to accompany my five-year-old and my three-year-old. I have to brag, Rex. We have my three-year-old daughter going as an Oompa Loompa, but my five-year-old son is going, get this, as a Golf Channel reporter.
No kidding.
He is going to be a mini-me. We got him.
Wait a minute. Is he a specific Golf Channel reporter or just
me.
A random Golf Channel?
He's me. Nope. He is Cameron Lavner, a future Golf Channel reporter. We got him like a little tiny FootJoy polos. He'll be wearing some very basic khakis like I do. I got him some On Clouds. We got him a mic with the Golf Channel flag. It's all going to be very cute. We can sort of save the Halloween discussion for a couple weeks time. I'm curious why you're even bringing this up on October 16th, because clearly you have a point to make.
We had a Halloween party in our neighborhood, and it's like the highlight of the year for my wife because she spends a lot of time thinking about what she wanted us to go as. And we had a disagreement because what she wanted me to go as was not appropriate. And she thinks I was being overly sensitive. I'm not even going to say what she wanted me to go as. It would have gotten me canceled. Let's just leave it at that. Like if anyone had ever
come
seen,
on, say it.
No. I'm not even going to say it. My alternative, though, was to go as Scottie Scheffler in the orange overalls. And she could go as Detective Brian Davis dressed up as an aggravated
Gillis. Brian Gillis. Put some respect on Brian Gillis's name.
I always get that wrong. And she said, no one's going to know what that is. No one would know what that is, she claims. And so we go to this party as something else. We went as like horse riders in the dressage competition at the Paris Olympics. Lame. Anyway, there was like three people dressed as Scottie Scheffler and Detective Gillis. I was so mad. Like that would have been the perfect costume for me and everyone would have known, right? Am I wrong?
Absolutely. Everyone would have known the viral image from a couple weeks ago. You'll remember with the two young kids who were dressed up as Scottie Scheffler. The best part was the license plate behind it said, didn't it say Augusta on the license plate? Like it was just so perfect, so well done. Even Scottie Scheffler appearing in the Subpar podcast with Colt Nost said that his wife Meredith showed him and he got an absolute kick out of it. I do think that was lame. I think the people at home, Rex, deserve to know. You can't just tease what your wife wanted you to do. You didn't actually do it. What did your wife want you to do that you eventually said no to?
No, I don't even want to say it. I don't even want to say it because it's very inappropriate. And she didn't understand why. And we even had to run it by a bunch of her friends who were like, yeah, Rex doesn't need to be dressed up as that. Even if it's just among friends, my point was, is that nothing is just among friends anymore. So we needed to be a little bit more careful about it because, and I will say this, and this is probably going to get me canceled in retrospect, that I went as Jeffrey Dahmer and she was my grandmother. If you remember that series from, don't think it was last year. I think it was 2 or 3 years ago. And she just thought it was the funniest thing in the world. Well, those people that did this ended up getting canceled anyway. So it's along those lines. It just gives you an idea of where her head's at when she does this.
Your contract expires on December 31st. getting canceled within the 3-month window would certainly be a choice. Rex, let's move on to the golf news of the week. Let's start with Sports Business Journal reporter and friend of the program. Josh Carpenter, reporting that LIV has quietly been exploring a new CEO for the organization. This, of course, is not the first time that Greg Norman's role has appeared to be at least in some jeopardy, but this time it sounds like he'll still be part of LIV, just moved into upper management. What's your read on this? Is this perhaps a sign that some concessions are being made, a deal is closer, or is this an organization going through the machinations of upper level management and trying to get some different pieces in place.
I think it's an evolving organization, to your point. I think that's a really good way of putting it. And I think it's really easy to overlook the fact that LIV Golf went from zero to 100 and whatever miles an hour really, really quickly. And to do that, they had to put a lot of people in positions that I'm going to say they weren't qualified for. And I think Greg Norman is one of those people. And look, he's going to push back on that, and I'm going to get some hate. And everyone's going to say that I'm a LIV Golf hater. I'm really not. Like, I'm curious, I'm fascinated, I'm a reporter. I want to see how this all plays out going into the future. But if you were to tell me 5 years ago that Greg Norman is going to sit in a room and negotiate a media rights deal with a new startup golf league, I wouldn't have told you he was qualified for that. And again, it's not necessarily a shot against Greg Norman. It's those things are really complicated. And we've seen in the past how only people who have done this their entire lives really should be in that room. And we see it from the TV media rights perspective, and we see it from the sports league perspective. Again, these are complicated. They have to be handled in a very delicate way. And everything else that LIV Golf needs to negotiate for going forward. We had a producer reach out to me. I'm going to be on Golf Central talking about this later on today. And Mark Zahner reached out to me last night. And so I called a source at LIV Golf. And the way this was described to me was essentially Greg would become the commissioner of the tour itself. And then there would be a CEO who is more qualified to sit into these negotiations for a new media rights deal and whatever corporate sponsorship they're trying to obtain going forward. I think that's a good move on their part. And my understanding is that Greg's completely on board. I'm sure that he'd much rather just deal with the tournaments and the players and trying to run a tour than all of the difficult parts of trying to get a business up and running again from the ground floor. And you look at what LIV Golf has done the last couple of weeks. They just hired a former Nike executive to be their chief marketing officer from Josh Carpenter's report, Sports Business Journal, which was very good. They're looking for some other C-suite folks, some other chief executives to step in. And so this seems like a good way to fill it out. To answer your final question was, how does this impact the negotiations? I don't think it really impacts them, at least substantially, because Greg has made it clear he's not in that room for these negotiations. This is between the Public Investment Fund of Saudi Arabia and the PGA Tour, and to a lesser extent, the DP World Tour. Greg is very much on the outside of that. Now, I think it might help on some level when you look at the animosity that folks on the PGA Tour side have had towards Greg, specifically Rory McIlroy. Tiger Woods has even had some nasty comments. So if you, I don't want to say take Greg out of the picture, because that's clearly not going to be the case, but if you minimize his role a little bit, tone down the rhetoric a little bit, I could see how this could help move some sort of potential deal going forward.
Yeah, I think that's well said. It's always made sense. I guess the only surprise is that it took this long to move Greg Norman out of the CEO role. Like, it always made sense to have a front-facing global icon like Greg Norman as the sort of face or head of the league, sort of be a spokesman, sort of be the chief recruiter, the lead recruiter for the organization. And then eventually you turn the business over to a professional who has dozens of years of experience leading a major organization. To the last point, and whether this is potentially a positive sign for the developments between the PGA Tour and Saudi Public Investment Fund, I mean, folks like Rory McIlroy and Tiger Woods have been saying since the fall of 2022, 2 years ago, that Norman has to go, and it hasn't happened yet. It wouldn't surprise me, Rex, if that was sort of one of the terms or the conditions of a deal, that Norman can't be in that CEO role. In that sense, it's probably a little bit encouraging to think that this is moving along in that respect, but I don't think it's any more encouraging than, you know, the optics of seeing Jay Monahan, Yasir Al-Rumayyan, Guy Kinnings all together in Scotland, playing at the Dunhill Links. Again, this does not feel imminent. And if you're the tour and trying to get the best deal possible with the PIF, you'd want to wait a little bit longer for leverage. But maybe this is a little bit of sign that maybe there's some light at the end of the tunnel.
And talking with people on the LIV side, I think everyone all along understood that this was going to be the end game eventually. You need someone sitting in that role that knows more about business than they know about golf. And that wasn't going to be Greg Norman. People are going to point out that he ran a bunch of businesses. I would question how many of them were actually successful. So I don't think he was the guy to be that CEO going forward. And look, we could probably have the exact same conversation about Jay Monahan, given where we are in the state of the game right now. And I'm not picking on either side. I'm just stating facts. I don't know who is qualified to be in that room with Yasser Al-Rumayyan to try to negotiate a multi-billion dollar deal that's going to be scrutinized by the Department of Justice and probably the U.S. Senate. So none of those things are easy. But I do think this is probably just another, if nothing else, than just window dressing. Then Liv Goff can say, look, the one person that everyone seemed to have a problem with is now kind of in a diminished role. We have someone else in here who you can talk to that hasn't been sort of stoking the flames on social media or in the media in general. I think that's helpful. I think there's another aspect to this, and it's important to point out that Yasser Al-Rumayyan is nothing else if he's very, very loyal to the players who joined Liv Goff, and I think Greg Norman is going to be another example. It would probably be easier for him just to tell Greg to go away and just to replace him as CEO/commissioner with someone else that's maybe more open, you know, easier to negotiate with. In this particular case, it's clear that Yasser is going to be loyal to Greg, just like he's been loyal to every player who's come over. You've seen the way he handles, he's paying all the fines for the players who want to play the European Tour. He's stuck behind all of these contracts. I think it's a sign, the little bit we know about Yasser, that is an interesting part.
Yeah, and the commissioner role does make a lot of sense. It could still allow Greg Norman to go to every single event. It could still allow him to sort of spread the live gospel. It could allow him to still be that front-facing figure who's giving interviews for better or worse. It does seem like a better role for Greg Norman than, again, running the actual business. Since last we talked on the podcast, Rex, you were in New York City for the Ryder Cup Year to Go event. I wish we'd waited a couple days. I guess we didn't know that this was going to be coming out. But the prices for the 2025 Ryder Cup matches, they went viral on social media. If you guys missed it, Kevin Van Valkenburg, another friend of the program of No Laying Up, put the prices out there from the RyderCup.com facts. So this is legit. This is from the PGA of America's own website. The prices will be $255 for a practice round at Bethpage Black, $750 for each of the three competition days. Keep in mind, those are all-day affairs. From about 7 to 7, they do have a morning session and an afternoon session. The $750 also includes free food and non-alcoholic beverages. It does seem aggressive, Rex, but again, there must be a market for it since you are near New York City. What do you think? Is this egregious price gouging? Is this horrible optics after the last 3 years of greed? Will this turn the 2025 Ryder Cup into essentially the 2023 U.S. Open, where there was a quiet crowd that's essentially been priced out by the market? What do you think?
I think it could definitely do that. You go back to LACC, and that was clearly a country club crowd. It wasn't very loud. It wasn't very raucous. It isn't what we've come to expect from our major championships. Certainly, the Ryder Cup is being billed, and we continue to build it up as probably the biggest party that golf has seen in a very long time. If you're paying $750 a day to be there, though, you're probably not going to be the guy who's going to want to get kicked out on the first hole. You're probably going to want to hang around and make the most of your entire day. If our text threads are any indication, you were so angry about this that, and I did not share your anger at all, because my point was
not true. I believe I said laughable or ridiculous. Keep in mind, you and I,
and my response was people will pay that much. Like, that's my point. You like, I learned this a long time ago early in this business. You are what someone's willing to pay you. Your market value is whatever Golf Channel or someone else is willing to pay you right now. The market value for one of those tickets, I'm sure, is in that $750 range, because the PGA of America has probably flushed this out and they've realized that, oh, we can sell out at this price, just like we could sell out at $50 a day if we wanted to do it that way. It's just economics. Like, I'm totally on board with this. You're right. It's probably going to impact the type of person that gets into the Ryder Cup. And maybe, we had this long discussion about this last week, that's maybe not a bad thing. But if you're the PGA of America, why would you price it for less when you know you can get that much for that ticket?
I mean, yeah, clearly you can get it. And look, I think you and I are terrible sources on this, because again, we are paying an exact total of $0 to attend the 2025 Ryder Cup. Any expenses that we are incurring the week of at Bethpage Black, whether it's our airfare, whether it's our transportation, whether it's our meal, are being taken care of by our employer. So again, we are not the best judges of whether or not this is fair or foul. I do think it looks egregious in the sense that for the last 3 years, we've been looking at player greed, organizational greed, all of this infighting over money, and all of a sudden you're going to charge $750 for one day of a spectator event, Rex. That's not even a good watch. It's the Ryder Cup might be the worst tournament to attend in golf. You can't get particularly close to the action. You can't see anything. All of the action, as opposed to being spread over 18 holes like you'd see at a regular PGA Tour event, is essentially confined to four different holes. Singles matches, obviously, are a different animal. But they're going to be on four separate holes. So you're going to have roughly 10,000 people following along. You can't see. A lot of the greens at Bethpage Black are going to be elevated. Like, it is a very, very tough sell from that respect, just like an actual sporting conversation. And we can get into that in a little bit. But I think this will, Rex, renew some of those arguments that these players should be paid for playing. Like, revenue sharing with the players has to be a consideration at this point. It was just a year ago that Patrick Cantlay was being taunted for the hat gate and all that went into it. Xander Schauffele and his father, Stefan, not happy about the fact that they were not being compensated for their efforts as well. Like, in what other sporting pursuit in 2024 would players be asked to play for free? And I know that the PGA of America gives them $200,000 that they can use for the charity of their choice. But this is a massive, monumental sporting event. And being asked and asking the players to show up basically to play for their country for free, I think just does not fly in this age of NIL and athlete empowerment.
It doesn't. And again, this goes back to the idea that every league is going to say they're going to do what's best for the fan. We've seen time and time again that more times than not, the leagues do what's best for the leagues. And the bottom line in this particular case, to answer your question about comparison, like, I was really, really curious what this, and you're right, it's not the best spectator event. You're paying for the
It might be the worst. It might be the worst. You're paying to get on property, to yell some things, to be a part of the vibe, is to post on Instagram and TikTok. Like, I totally get it. But from a fan perspective, the Ryder Cup is not what you want. Again, we are not good judges on this. We are inside the ropes. Yeah. We have an unadulterated view of what we can see. However, if you are a fan, you need to get to the first tee by what, 5 a.m.? Like, you're literally running to get to the grandstand. Again, you're not going to be able to see a whole lot around the greens. You're not going to be close to the action, particularly with some of the concerns they're going to have about fan behavior. Like, they're going to have those ropes way off the fairway. You can certainly imagine in that respect. You mentioned comparable sporting events for that price. Like, okay, I went to a Buffalo Bills Monday Night Football game when they played the Jags.
I knew you were going to get to that.
I paid $80 for that ticket.
A Jags Lakers bad.
Come Lakers, on. But it's still Buffalo, which Buffalo sells out. The Buffalo Bills sell out every single game. It was $80 for a Monday Night Football game ticket. The Lakers Suns game in a couple weeks time, you can get in for $125. The Kansas City Chiefs and the San Francisco 49ers play on Sunday. It's a big matchup. You can get in for about $200 each. Right now, I was actually surprised by this. $250, Rex, gets you in for Dodgers Mets NLCS. That's again, that price hikes up to about $1,200 for the World Series. I would assume a Subway Series would be much more than that. Super Bowl is obviously going to be five bills, depending on your seat. So in that respect, Rex, like, $750 is still a little bit high. But again, it's about 12 hours of fun. And if you're the PGA of America, if you can fetch it, why wouldn't you charge that?
Well, and here's the comp that I wanted to go to. You pointed out it is going to be the atmosphere. You're going for the party. You're right. You're going to drink. You're going to yell some things. You're going to stand on the first tee and sing songs. By comparison, I almost want to compare it to like the way Formula One races have evolved into just parties with a race that's going on in the middle. And I just looked it up. So for the Formula One race in November, which I think is the next one coming up in Brazil, it's €697. Which is very comparable to $750. If you keep scrolling down, the one in Vegas, which I think is later this year, that's $1,500 That's a one-day ticket. Good. So no, that's not a fair comparison. But again, people are paying it, and that's what they're paying for. They're not particularly paying to see the cars go in circles. They're paying to be part of this atmosphere, part of the party. And I think that's what the PGA is trying to capitalize on when it comes to the Ryder Cup.
That's very interesting to hear that the prices for F1 are that really expensive high. Because like, keep in mind, what I remember talking to Rory about a year ago, and I asked him like what his vision for these signature events were on the PGA Tour. And he said they wanted to create an F1 style event on the PGA Tour, where if you've got, I don't know, the Travelers Championship, like you have a party set up in Cromwell, Connecticut, and oh yeah, the best players in the world are also going to be playing golf. And so he even anticipated like Thursday, Friday, probably going to be slightly smaller crowds, still less juice, because again, it's just sort of the run up in the tournament. And then on the weekend, it should be a happening where the people who are there to party also see some golf. And then you have some post round entertainment as well. Like that's not going to fly on the PGA Tour for $750 to $1,500 a ticket. That's essentially what they're asking them to do, right? Like if the F1 stops are going to be in Austin and Vegas and Miami, and everywhere else, same thing on the PGA Tour, whether you're going from Harbor Town to TBC River Highlands to Pebble Beach, like that to me seems like a big picture discussion topic for what the PGA Tour should do as well. Because again, you do run the risk of eliminating a certain segment of the population that's going to look at that price tag and just be like, nope, way too aggressive, can't do it. And it's just you're catering to a certain level of socioeconomic status, which is exactly what golf should be getting away from at this point. And the atmosphere in turn is, I think, could potentially be harmed.
Well, it's the economies of scale in this particular case. And I think we said this last week, the Ryder Cup is by far the most popular event in golf. It's not the biggest event. It's not the most important event, but it's by far the most popular event. It's one of the most popular sporting events. And I think that's why you see this sort of crossover pricing where you can compare it to a Formula One race or an ALCS game or one of the bigger sporting events that go on in general in the world. And so I don't think you're going to have that when it comes to Bay Hill, the Arnold Palmer Invitational here in my hometown of Orlando. No, you're not going to get $750 a day for a ticket, but you're probably going to end up getting $150 or $200 a day.
You folks are very good on the YouTube channel of letting us know what you think. Put it in the comments. It's $750.
Well, what are your season tickets at the Jags games? You bragged about this on numerous occasions. So give me an idea. Ballpark.
There's no sort of bragging about a 1-5 team. Let's be very clear. And I would expect that tickets.
I think
will be
my text to you on Sunday morning.
Tickets will be slashed for 2025. There's no doubt.
To you on Sunday morning is the Jaguars are proof that Americans still don't like the Brits, because that's the football we gave them.
It's gonna get worse on Sunday. The Patriots and the Jaguars, those poor people in London, have to witness that again. Two of the worst teams, two of the four worst teams in the NFL, going head to head. That's got 13-6 written all over it. As it pertains to the price tag, I think it was like $1,500 per seat, which divided by seven games, I'm not very good. We were talking in our text group chain about like, should we drop the season tickets and just sort of do it a la carte? Like, do we really want to see the Titans play, or can you just spend a little bit more? Again, spend $150 for a ticket when the Packers come to town or the Vikings come to town. I think that's probably a different conversation that we can have. But again, $750 is very high. Let us know in the comments whether you would be willing to shell out that sort of money to see essentially 12 hours of golf. Hey, plus food and non-alcoholic beverages. One other storyline I wanted to get into, Rex, before we shut down the podcast for today is Matt McCarty continuing his red hot run. Became the first player since Jason Gore in the mid-2000s, our boy Jason Gore, to earn a promotion on the Korn Ferry Tour and then win on the PGA Tour in the same season. Incredibly impressive. Shows just the high caliber that not just Matt McCarty has been playing, but sort of that top-level Korn Ferry Tour player as well. It did, however, continue a trend of all three fall winners being outside the top 100 in the world rankings. Only 9 players total have played this fall who are among the top 50 in the FedEx Cup standings. Matt McCarty is going to be playing at Augusta National. Meanwhile, number 31 in the FedEx Cup will not, as of now, should the fall winners in the PGA Tour, again, it's no longer a wraparound. The top players are no longer required to play them or risk falling way down the FedEx Cup race. Should the fall winners still get that perk of going to Augusta National?
I think in the short term, until you can get a better picture, because you keep referring to the world ranking, and I've gotten to the point in my mind, I know that's what we have to use, and we also use the Data Golf rankings, which I feel is actually a better representation of where we are right now. But let's face it, world rankings broken. And so you can sit here and say, only I didn't realize that's actually a really good stat, that only that many players outside the top 50 have even participated in the fall. However, we don't even know what the world ranking is anymore. So I think Augusta National, and we've seen this in the past, they usually take a long, hard look at these types of things. And in this particular case, there has been the precedent set that, okay, the fall events come with these perks, and one of them being an invite to the Masters. We also know that Augusta isn't averse to taking a long, hard look and doing something that could probably potentially hurt the fall events. This is a bigger question. This is a bigger conversation just about the fall events. And I wrote about it, I think, 2 weeks ago in my Friday notes column, because the idea is, to your point, they're quickly becoming an afterthought. And I wrote about it the week of the Sanderson Farms, because Sanderson Farms was stepping down as the title sponsor. I think they're still going to be involved in the tournament. I've spoken with other sponsors in the fall, and it's the same sentiment. If you're not getting the bang for your buck, again, this goes back to the economy of scale. If the companies aren't getting out what they feel like they're putting into these events, and up until this point, they have. But I think what the fall is going to evolve into is going to have to become something different than what it is right now. Essentially, it's a 6, 7, 8 week Q school now for guys to either improve their status or get status, period. That's fine. There has to be these avenues for players to play their way back in. But if that's what they're going to become, then yes, you need to take a long, hard look at the Masters invite. You need to take a long, hard look at, should those players be exempt for 2 years on the PGA Tour? Because what you're doing, and look, I think Matt McCarty's had a phenomenal, I mean, he has done all of this since July. That's 3 wins on the Korn Ferry Tour and winning on the PGA Tour. I think he has one other top five on the PGA Tour as well over the course of that season. That's all impressive, but you can't compare Matt's win last week at the Black Desert event to, I don't know, fill in the blank, whatever regular season tour event you want to compare it to. You can do it rankings wise, but as I just mentioned, I feel like those are broken on some level. What Matt accomplished last weekend was awesome, and he should be rewarded for that. But we're getting to the point where you need to take a long, hard look at exactly how much should he be rewarded.
Yeah, I mean, as it pertains to the Masters and their field criteria, like, this was the first year that they'd returned to the calendar year schedule on the PGA Tour. It does seem like only a matter of time before Augusta looks at these fall events, sees how weak the fields are, sees the average world ranking of not just the winners, but the participants, and how deep they're going on the alternate list, just to sort of fill out these fields and just be like, ah, I think we're good. I think we can go ahead and fill out our field in myriad other ways. And again, they always try to keep it under 100. The average field size of the past 2 decades is somewhere around 91. They're not going to have any trouble doing that. But I think they're already showing plenty of love to the PGA Tour is Augusta National, right? Like, anyone who makes it to the Tour Championship automatically gets into the Masters field. Any regular season win, regardless of stature, is getting into the Masters. I think there has to be another way. Maybe there's sort of this Rolex series swing on the DP World Tour. Like, if you're Augusta National, if you're the Masters, you are trying to get the strongest field possible. That is why Chairman Fred Ridley and the tournament committee are looking at other ways to sort of get in the outstanding LIV players through other avenues and tournament exemptions and that sort of thing. And so they're always going to have their amateurs. They're always going to have the past champions. They're going to have the best and the brightest from the PGA Tour. But if you're the Masters, you want to have the strongest possible field, picking off the 7 or 8 winners from the PGA Tour, which, again, are paling in comparison to field strength to right now what's happening on the DP World Tour. There has to be another way. And I would anticipate in the next year or two, the Masters coming to that conclusion as well.
Well, and I just looked it up. So the best comparison is the week of the Sanderson Farms, which the winner got 30.8 points, compared to the Dunhill Links Championship, which was the European Tour event. And that got 37.8 points. One of those guys that won not Tyrrell Hatton, who won at the Alfred Dunhill Links Championship, got an invitation to the Masters. So you see how the system is flawed right now.
Yeah, it does not seem like a good situation. Rex and I will get into what can be done to save the fall, if anything, in future podcasts. Right now, we've already elapsed our time, and Rex has to get ready for Golf Central. All right, that is going to do it for this edition of Golf Channel Podcast with Rex and Lav. You guys know the drill. NBCSports.com/golf for our latest news, notes, and updates over the next week in golf. Rex will be back next week for a full podcast breaking down the week that was in the world of golf. Thanks for listening. Thanks for the support. We'll talk to you guys next week.
Congrats, Cam. Big week, pal.